I love the colorful clothes you wear, and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle word on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations.
Well, hello, I'm Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here coming from the central coast of California. You know, quantum physics tells us that we're all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We're your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Now, Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is also the promoter producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair, coming to the Monterey Fairgrounds October 29th and 21st and 22nd. My goodness, this Mercury retrograde striking me all over the place today. So the 21st and 22nd, the weekend prior to Halloween, so we get to tap into that wonderful Samhain energy, that Halloween energy, that time when the veils between the worlds are thin. And that means only one thing. It's time to have fun. So go ahead and go to rhodaspsychicfair.com, sign up for the email list so you can stay informed of our ongoing events throughout the year, as well as to be notified early enough to remind yourself about the Rhoda Psychic Fair October 21st and 22nd at the Monterey Fairgrounds. Excuse me a minute, a little bit dry in the throat. So how are you doing on this 20th of April? Can you believe it's the 20th of April? We're already in our Taurus time of the year. We moved there. On the 19th, we moved into that. Yesterday, we moved, the sun moved into Taurus. We're getting that good earth energy, that grounding, that persistence, that slow, cautious forward momentum that helps us handle so many things. And here we are at the 20th of April now. I don't know about you, but this year has been rushing so fast that I feel grateful to be at this point where we can slow down a little bit. We can reflect. We can plan going forward. We can take steps that keep moving us in the right direction, but we don't have to rush at them. We can be more deliberate in the entire approach. And as you know from listening to the show, one of the deliberate approaches I like to take on each show is from Day by Day with James Allen. Now, in 1903, James Allen wrote his essay, As a Man Thinketh. And he took the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. It seems that James Allen wanted to remind us that where we are in our present reality is a direct outcome of our past thoughts, actions, and habits, and beliefs. Everything we planted inside of ourselves sprouted into the reality where we are right now. But our past thoughts, habits, actions, and beliefs don't predict our future. Our present thoughts, habits, actions, and beliefs create our future. So every day when we awaken, we have a fresh opportunity to create a new reality for tomorrow. We're not stuck where we are because of what we've done. We're only stuck where we are if we continue to repeat what we've done without making any shifts or changes. And in Day by Day with James Allen, his words from As a Man Thinketh have been broken up into a little segment for each day of the month. And for the 20th day of the month, he says, be blind to failure. He who cherishes a beautiful vision, a lofty ideal in his heart, will one day realize it. As a matter of fact, he shares in here, they share the story. We know that Sir Edmund Hillary in 1953 was the first man to climb to the summit of Mount Everest. But, and many people have followed that trail, there are many guides and tour systems that will take people to the summit. But on September 5th, 2002, the first blind man reached the summit of Mount Everest. His name was Eric Weinmeier. Now, Eric had been blind since birth, but he never felt that blindness was a failure. And remember, today's Day by Day with James Allen says, be blind to failure. You know, and Eric understands that completely. You know, at one part in Eric's story, when he's still 9,000 feet from the summit, almost 2 miles, he stumbled into his camp. He was bloodied. He was sick. He was dehydrated, but he wasn't about to give up. You know, like the title says, Eric was blind to failure. And he said he had lived with his vision for years and he would not be denied. And the question for each of us is how often, because of what we can see, have we failed to have the vision that goes beyond what we see around us? How often have we failed to set a future vision for ourselves because we could only focus on what was around us? And what was around us was how we set our vision. Eric was blind to failure because he was blind. Because he couldn't see things around him, he didn't see anything as a limitation. He saw everything as an opportunity. So once again, James Allen says, he who cherishes a beautiful vision, a lofty ideal in his heart, will one day realize it. And one of the things I do every day to help reinforce for me that positive forward thinking is to read from the Daily Word put out by Unity. And today's Daily Word says, inner wisdom guides me to new ways of thinking and being. How well does that synchronize with the idea of be blind to failure? Inner wisdom guides me to new ways of thinking and being. The guidance I receive reflects the spiritual purpose that's uniquely mine, peacefully and in perfect trust. We've been talking all year about trusting, about opening, about allowing, about letting go. Have you been able to do that within the context of your life? Have you been able to release and let go? You know, today at 5:49 a.m. Pacific time, Pluto went retrograde in Capricorn. As most of you know, a retrograde takes the energy of that planet and drives it internally. It causes us to have to examine. Now, Pluto is all about power and death and transformation and rebirth. And when it went retrograde, it wants us to take a look at all those things inside of us, our own paranoia, our own woundings, our desires, and our need for survival. You see, Pluto wants us to take a look and say, where are you maybe manipulating others through your wounding? Oh, you think you're doing the right thing, but you're really doing it because you're afraid of losing that control, that power, that ability to drive your own life and make your own choices. So you're manipulating others through woundings. Then you're reveling in it because of the power. And Scorpio is saying, take a look at what's really good for you and what's necessary for you to relieve. Our release and our woundings are something we can all release. Our woundings are those things we carry forward and we use them as the premise or paradigm upon which we build our reactions or our connections with others. And in this year of knowing yourself, this year of the one, of the individual who knows themselves so well that it becomes their connection to the all, the connection with all others. This could be the most transformative transit we go through, is this Pluto retrograde, which will stay there until September 28th when it goes direct. It's giving us the time to say, look at where you're playing power for power. Look at where you're using your desire to sublimate what's actually right for you. Look at where you're manipulating others to prevent a wounding and maintain a control. And please, all of us do this in some area or in some way. So I encourage you to take a look at all of that through this transit. But you know, an area where we often try to control is in our interpersonal communications. And that leads us to our segment for today. So I'll come back to more of the planetary transits after we hear Dr. Arne Buss. You see, he received an undergraduate degree in psychology at Rutgers University and a PhD from Cornell University. And he's been teaching at the undergraduate and graduate level for over 30 years. His passion is facilitating and teaching classes about interpersonal communication. He works with individuals and couples to resolve their interpersonal communication issues. And in the past 7 years, he's given presentations on interpersonal communication skills to a number of organizations in the Monterey area. He's also a distinguished Toastmaster, and in 2011, he was a semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship of Public Speaking. He joins us with his segment, Speaking of Listening, on the third Thursday of each month. So let's listen to some introductory music and then hear from Dr. Arne Buss and Speaking of Listening.
Listen to the song here in my heart, a melody I start but can't complete. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find relief.
And welcome to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio with Solazar. As he said, I'm your host for the segment, Arne Buss. And speaking of listening is about ways of improving all of your relationships by listening and communicating from your heart. And I will be giving presentations on this. To find out more information, you can contact me at my email, ahbuss, at ConsciousAwareHeart, all one word, ConsciousAwareHeart.com. You can visit me on my website. That's www.ConsciousAwareHeart.com. And today, I want to talk about a term which we've been hearing a lot about since the last presidential election. And that term is gaslighting. And you may or may not be familiar with it. If you're not familiar with it, you may have been hearing it. It's been a term that's directed towards, at least of late, towards our current president by some individuals who are not in favor of him. Again, I'm not talking about politics here. I'm not getting into kind of who's right or who's wrong, or whether the president is doing wonderfully or he's driving the country into a ditch. People believe all of those different things. That's not what this segment is about. This segment is about communication. And the reason I want to focus on this gaslighting term is because I feel that it can be very counterproductive. It's certainly counterproductive in relationships, and that's what I'm focused on. But I also believe that it's a counterproductive thing to bring into things like a political discourse and whatnot. Again, regardless of what your beliefs are as far as that goes. And you know, in the interest of disclaimer, I mean, I have certain views with respect to all of that, and that's not relevant to what I'm talking about today. So gaslighting, what is it? I'll give some examples. You know, some of these examples I've pulled from resources of people who talk about it, what its origins are, which is kind of interesting. And then I want to finish up with why I feel that it's counterproductive in relationships, just as something to bring in. And especially why it need not have its intended effect. I mean, just because I feel that it's, and I hope to convince you, if you're listening to this, that it is not an effective concept, that doesn't mean that there are some elements of what's going on in that term, in terms of what's being described, that are very much detrimental to any relationship. So it's not that there's anything great about what happens when, say, somebody who's being accused of being gaslighting is doing that. It's just that as a concept, it's not effective. It's not helpful in bringing the relationship forward. And I'm all about bringing any relationship forward. And what I mean by that is taking it from a place where there's an area of conflict or difference or ideal, you know, not ideally, but I mean, usually there's like a chronic, you know, conflict that goes on. If you're in a relationship, as I've said before, then there's going to be conflict and you've got to deal with that. If you're in a long-term relationship, you may find that the conflicts distill down to several themes. In fact, some couples are so familiar with that they get into it and say, okay, this is our argument number 35. Okay, you know, so you know what that is. And communication, the kind of communication that I've been talking about in this segment and that I talk about in my workshops and in my personal work, is a way of moving beyond that. But let's get back to gaslighting. Now, gaslighting, according to its definition, and then there are a number of definitions out there, some of which are more and some of which are less useful, but it's presented as a form of emotional abuse. It's said to be an attempt to manipulate by psychological means into questioning their own sanity, you know, meaning that, you know, oh, you're, you know, that didn't happen. I didn't say that. You know, you're crazy for thinking that. I mean, those are the words that people describe gaslighters as saying. Another thread of this is a persistent denial, misdirection, contradiction, and lying. And this is a key part of the definition, in that it attempts to destabilize the target and delegitimize the target's belief. In other words, the gaslighters, the so-called gaslighters' intent is to have their victim doubt their own thoughts and their feelings or even their own sanity. And that's a key point. If you read articles or books, that they will, if it's a thoughtful one, they will try to distinguish, you know, being gaslighting from just kind of normal lying or, you know, normal kind of misdirection. Dr. Robin Stearns wrote a book on gaslighting, and her definition is the systematic attempt by one person to erode another's reality. This is done by telling them that what they are experiencing isn't so, and the gradual giving up on the part of the other person. Her last point is kind of a key one, I think, because to go back to one of my favorite quotes by Eleanor Roosevelt, she said once, "There are no victims, only volunteers." Now, perhaps that doesn't apply to each and every case. But again, let me read that again. The gradual giving up on the part of the other person. In other words, requires the person who's so-called being gaslighted to buy into it. And without that, then it simply doesn't have the supposed intended effect. So here are some examples that I've taken from various sources. So one example that's often cited is if somebody insults you or criticizes you and then pretends it was a joke and says, "Oh, what's the matter? Don't you have a sense of humor?" They say that's gaslighting. Or another one that I saw recently, it says, if an abusive person, it's very interesting, is that they assume that this is an abusive person, that they say hurtful things and make you cry, and then instead of apologizing and taking responsibility, they start recommending treatments for what they call your depression or your mood swings, then that is gaslighting, they say. Or another example is instead of addressing the issue, the other person tells you you're way too sensitive and way too stressed. They say that's gaslighting. And none of these are wonderful things to say to another person, to any other person, whether it's an intimate partner, whether it's a friend, a coworker. So it's not that these are terrific things, but remember the key element of the definition, that the intent is to make you crazy. The intent is to make you believe that you're crazy. I mean, here's another longer example that I saw on the net. They say, here's a relationship scenario. They say, Jade has been married for 5 years and has 2 small children with her husband, Mike. For the past few months, she has been trying to establish a small art shop, but when she asks for her husband's assistant, his mood darkens, and he says, I can't believe you're spending so much time on this shop. Don't you care about me? Don't you care about your kids? You're supposed to be mothering them. And Jade is shocked, and she says, but I just wanted you to help me setting up the store, and I haven't been neglecting anyone. And then Mike comes very close to her face and says, you see, now you're denying it. When I married you, I thought you'd be there for the family. I should just take the kids and go already. And he storms off. And later, when they sit down to talk, and Mike says, honey, you know, you were overreacting, and you know, you've been obsessing over this shop too much. That makes the rest of us feel very ignored and excluded. I hope you understand that. You know, that's given as an example of gaslighting. But you know, if you look at it through another lens, again, it's not that these aren't wonderful ways of communicating. In a little bit, I'll maybe give some alternative ways or ways that Jade could have responded or ways that Mike could have addressed the issue. But to say that this is gaslighting just means that we have to go inside of Mike's head and find out what his intent is. And was his intent to make his wife crazy? We don't know. I mean, here's another scenario that I got from an article on the internet, and it's about a woman, Sophie, and she's been working in her department, and then she's given a promotion to another level of the company, but she has a trial period, and then. At first, you know, she gets along well with her supervisor and gets all her tasks in on time. And then her supervisor starts to ask her to do belittling chores and favors here and there with increasing frequency. And while Sophie is fine with helping out, she finds that Kelly is becoming more and more demanding. And finally, as Sophie's work piles up to an unbearable level, she tells Kelly that she needs to focus on completing her work, but she can help another time. And then the presumably the gaslighting happens in a staff meeting. Kelly, Sophie's supervisor, introduces Sophie and says, although she's not keeping up with us yet, I'm sure she'll learn to embody our hardworking ethics soon. And of course, Sophie feels publicly humiliated and insulted, and she's afraid for her new job. And then later she asks her supervisor why she thinks that she's not embodying her hard work ethic, And the supervisor said, oh, you misunderstood me. I just said you're not used to our pace of work so that other people can help you out. And then the description of this scenario says, from then on, Sophie accepts all extra demands and chores, no matter how much work she has or how demeaning the tasks are. And now this is an example of gaslighting, where the presumption is that the intent of the supervisor is to make Sophie, the employee, doubt her own reason, doubt her own thoughts, doubt her own sanity. And the thing is that we don't, as with Mike, we don't know. You don't know what's going on for the supervisor. Now, of course, nothing that the supervisor was doing is effective communication. It's certainly not effective management. It's along the management philosophy of the floggings will continue until morale improves. You know, that's not an effective way to do things. But we don't know why Kelly, the supervisor, is doing that. And to label it as a psychological clinical term like gaslighting is just really very counterproductive in trying to reach an acceptable outcome for this. And I'll come back to that in a little bit. But if you're not familiar with the term gaslighting, well, I talked about some definitions, but its origin goes all the way back to 1938. In 1938, there was a British play called Gaslight that was made into a movie in 1940 called Gaslight, and then it was remade in 1944 in a more high-budget film that starred some very high-profile stars. It had Charles Boyer, Ingrid Bergman, and Joseph Cotton. In 1944, again, the movie was called Gaslight. And the plots in the play and the first and second movie had some minor differences. But the key element and the reason they take it from this is that the antagonist in that movie is actually a murderer who, unbeknownst to his current wife, is using her to locate some expensive jewels that he believes are hidden in the attic of their house. He had killed his first wife to get his hands on the jewels, but hadn't been able to get them. So he's managed to manipulate his current wife into marrying them, living in this house, and he is convinced that the jewels are up in this attic. And so what he does is he kind of sneaks out and gets into the attic. And again, think of the time. The original play was in 1938, and at that time, a lot of the older houses were lit with gas. And there was like one common gas line. So when he was in the attic looking for them, he would turn the gas lights in the attic on while he was searching the various parts of the attic looking for these jewels. And when he did that, the lights in the house would dim because of the extra gas being used. So where the gas lighting comes in is that his wife says, you know, hey, what's going on? Like, all of a sudden the lights will dim, and I hear noises in the attic. And basically, because he wants to get the jewels, he you're hearing things. Oh, you're imagining things. And then he winds up doing some other things, like kind of, he'll like take some of her belongings, at one point he takes his watch and he puts it in her purse and then claims that she had stolen it and then finds it there. And he's trying to kind of make her out her own sanity. And the reason he's doing that is because he figures if she ever catches him or tries to convince people that he's doing something nefarious, that they're not going to believe her. That, you know, so the key here, and this is the problem, one of the many problems that I have with its connection to the term, is that his objective, it was a purely instrumental objective. He wanted to get his hands on the jewels. I mean, obviously he was a bad guy. He was a murderer. He was a thief. He was trying to get these jewels. He really didn't have as his main objective driving his wife insane or making her doubt her sanity. That was a tactic to get what he wanted, not an end in itself. But the way the gaslighting is presented in the modern use is that the intent, the main objective, is to make the other person doubt their own sanity. And that's not the way it was used in the film. And in fact, in every case that I've seen that claims to be gaslighting, there's really something else going on. There's really some other objective. And what's happening in many cases is the person who's supposedly doing the gaslighting is doing it as a tactic to get their needs met. Now, that doesn't make it a good thing, like I said. I mean, it's a very ineffective tool to get your needs met. And of course, in the movies, he gets his comeuppance in the end. So that's, but the thing is that now, reverting to the modern definition, there are many reasons why it's a counterproductive concept. And the first is that the gaslighter always seems to be the other guy. So now, why is it that, as with many things, the guy, the one doing the gaslighting, is always the other person. And the thing is that it's like when I talk about difficult people, who knows a difficult person, and everybody in the room will raise their hand and say, who among you is that difficult person? And then of course people will jokingly raise their hand, but they're joking, that they don't really believe that they're a difficult person. I mean, it's always the other guy. And the gaslighter is always the other guy. And if you're always pointing fingers at the other guy, then you're not focusing on the effective way to solve your problem. Now, certainly lying is an issue, but we don't need a new term for lying. I mean, lying is lying. The distinguishing feature is intent. I mean, most lying is instrumental, as I said. In other words, it's done in order to achieve some other result, like to save face or to not hurt somebody's feelings. Or we might lie to cover up our own shame. Or we might lie to get something we desire. Or we might lie to avoid punishment. We rarely lie as an objective of making the other person crazy. And, the thing is that we don't know what's going on. And somebody who lies, just even considering lying, they may think they're telling the truth. I mean, what is there to distinguish? The one thing that distinguishes a lie from a misstatement is what they believe. And some people believe things that simply aren't true. We actually all do. I guarantee that there is something that you believe that simply is not true. I know that's true of me. I mean, I try to examine my thoughts, question them as much as possible, but I'm not so naive as to think that everything that I believe is true. And just like a meme I saw that don't believe everything you think, I think is very, very apt. I mean, it's like the old joke of, they brought a lie detector to the insane asylum, and they hooked this one guy up, and they said, they said, well, are you Napoleon? And he said, no, of course not. But the lie detector showed he was lying. In other words, he really did believe he was Napoleon. That's kind of the joke. The point is, though, that, that somebody may really believe what they're saying, even if it's in the context of denying what they said before. They may really believe that they didn't say that. I mean, can you remember word for word everything that you've said? Or have you ever been accused of saying something and, you say, well, I don't think I said that, or no, I didn't say that. We all have done that. I don't know anybody who could honestly say that they have never been accused of saying something that they simply don't remember saying. Now, the other, name calling, criticism, verbal abuse, these are terrible things in any relationship. And they're issues that need to be addressed, especially if they're chronic. The fact is that, we all lie. I mean, if you say that you never lie, then I think you're lying, or at least misinformed about that. Often many times a day, maybe a little white lie, does this dress make me look fat? How did you like the dinner? Now, every person, except maybe the Dalai Lama, perhaps, loses their temper at times and says hurtful things. When you're furious at something, regardless of what it may be, you say all kinds of things. And if you're not, then you're either dead or an enlightened being. And if you're that enlightened, God bless you. But if you're like a normal human being, this happens. It happens. So in a way, we all gaslight at any given moment. But it comes down to intent. In that moment where you're just furious and angry and maybe in denial a little bit about what you've said or done, is your intent to hurt the other person, or is your intent to avoid pain yourself? And how do we know what a person's intent is when we can't peer into their thoughts? How do we know what it is they're trying to? Even in the case, our current president has been accused of gaslighting. Okay, I'm not convinced of that. I think there's every evidence that, even the most outrageous things that he says in the moment, I'm sure he believes them. And he said some pretty outrageous things, and you may be a supporter, you may be against them. I don't really care. He said some pretty outrageous things. And, if you're a supporter, maybe so, yeah. He said things that are just completely counterfactual. He said things that have, and then denied that he said them later. This is all under the classic definition of gaslighting. I'm not convinced that in each moment that he really believes what he's saying in that moment, even if it's deny something that he just said a short time ago. So if his intent is to express what's going on in that moment for him, and he's being genuine about that, then according to the definition, he's not gaslighting. And the thing is, we don't know. We simply don't know what that is. Intent is the key thing. And the other thing, and this gets back to that, remember that last part, the gradual giving up on the part of the other person, is, to me, boils down to blaming the other person for our own lack of effective boundaries. If I allow someone else to define my reality for me, then that's a boundary failure on my part, not on their part. And even the accusation of gaslighting, it can be used as a stick with which to beat some other person up. If you're a critic of the president, there's plenty to criticize without calling it gaslighting. And if you're a supporter of the president, then, there may not be much to criticize. Again, I'm not addressing that. It doesn't matter what you think of them. The point is that it's not an effective concept to bring into any discussion about that. The accusation of gaslighting can be like a witch test because, denial is one dimension of that. And so denying that you're gaslighting can be seen as proof of that. Many years ago, my wife and I were seeing a marriage counselor, and I was told that I was in denial. You're in denial. And I didn't think I was, so I said, no, I'm not. And they said, you see, you're denying it, so that means you're in denial. So it's like, talk about a catch-22. That's what these witch tests were. Remember the witch tests? So it's like they'd weigh the accused witch down with stones and throw her in the lake. And if she sank and drowned, then that meant that she was innocent. But if she floated, then that meant that the water was rejecting her and she was a witch, so they would kill her by other means. So it's like damned if you do and damned if you don't. So bottom line is, to be truly gaslighting, as the definition is stated, the person has to first know what the truth is and be lying with the intent to cause the other person to doubt their own thoughts. So those two things. In other words, if a person is saying something that's false, but they believe that it's true, then that's not even lying. And if they're, even if they know they're lying, if they're doing it to get what they want, then it may or may not cause the other person to doubt their own thoughts or sanity, but that's on them. Now, having said all that, the examples that are trotted forth are all examples that are sometimes encountered, especially in challenging relationships. And even in normal relationships, there are times when, like I said, people lose their temper, people say all kinds of things, people get upset. And the communication tools that I've been teaching and talking about, I believe, are the most effective way to counter any attempts at this so-called gaslighting. And these are specifically tracking and impact statements. So tracking, remember, tracking is validating the other person without defending or explaining. And it's not, that's just the first step in this. It's to really get at what the other person is trying to say. So let's go back to that scenario with Mike and Jade, where Mike says, "I can't believe you're spending so much time in this shop. Don't you care about me? Don't you care about your kids?" I mean, I don't know anybody who would want to hear that from a spouse. But, it's very possible that he's just very upset. He's upset about what's going on. And so Jade could track that because of the energy, go right to the want. So you want to see more time being spent with the family. And I guarantee you that a tracking response like that will just stop him in his tracks. And again, the object isn't to stop him in his tracks, but the object is to get him in touch with that. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, "You don't care about me. You don't care about your kids." And what he's expressing a want. He wants that more time. And that doesn't mean that she has to give up on her shop. And it doesn't mean that she isn't spending enough time with the family, but he feels she isn't. And maybe she feels she is. And then that's fodder for negotiation. And if he's intent on not responding to what she says back to them, especially the validating things, if his intent truly is to put her down, and put her in this one down position, then she's the one at some point that needs to question whether she needs to stay in that relationship, if that's really what the intent is. But I've never seen a situation, even in a very troubled relationship, where that's the case. Or, here's another example where they say, if somebody says, "You're just too sensitive." Well, that's there's a response to that I really like, because usually there's a reaction that, "Well, no, I'm not being too," and where that's coming from, and this is important to kind of understand, is it how important is it to you that other person sees things exactly the way you do? So what I think an effective response is, "You're just too sensitive," is not to deny it or defend it. It says, you might be right, and this still bothers me. Yeah, where can that person go from there? They can just repeat, "You're just being sensitive again." again, you might be right. The beauty of the phrase "you might be right" is it's not defending or denying, but it's not agreeing either. It's saying, well, that might be possible. But it doesn't leave the other person many places to really go, but it opens up the possibility of a dialogue. And if there's something that's bothering you, you have a right to express that and to be to have your needs met. It's a boundary issue. And when it comes to boundaries, there's nothing more effective than an impact statement, which is expressing your desired result without telling the other person what to do or how to do it, because that's kind of a boundary violation of yours on them to tell other people what to do. It's the most effective way I found to state boundaries. So when Sophie's supervisor, Sophie said, "Hey, why did you say that?" And Sophie's supervisor, if you remember, said, "I think you misunderstood. I just said you're not used to our pace at work so that other people can help you out." And, so now instead of getting into a "you said, yes, you said, no, you didn't say," which unless somebody taped, you can't really be resolved. Sophie might have said something like, while I do appreciate that, it felt uncomfortable to have it said in front of the entire group. And then, supervisor might say, "Well, you're just being too sensitive." And then Sophie could say, you might be right. And I would appreciate it if issues such as work pace are brought up to me in private so they can be worked out. And again, no matter how much the bluster continues to alternate between tracking, asserting the limit, and overriding, and I've spoken about those in other segments. So the bottom line is that I really feel that this gaslighting term is not an effective one. I don't believe it's an effective one in relationships because it's always the other person who's gaslighting. And that becomes kind of a criticism in itself. That's not to say that if you're in a relationship and you're being put down, you're being criticized, you're being attacked verbally, that's okay. And the response is to assert your limits, not to get into a he said, she said, and certainly not to buy into some kind of narrative that some other person is trying to present to you. Again, to reiterate Eleanor Roosevelt's quote, "There are no victims, only volunteers." And recognizing that what about somebody just attacks me on the street? What's interesting is the people who always kind of bring that up are trying to just undercut the whole point of it. And the point of it isn't that, is that there's sometimes when one is victimized by things, of course. But in the context of a relationship, that's the person you're in a relationship with. If they're like the person on the street who's going to mug you, then what are you doing in a relationship with that person? And instead, if you're in a relationship with a normal, fallible, flawed human being like yourself, who's just trying their best to get their needs met, then using effective communication and maintaining effective boundaries and limits on yourself is the way to move forward, not to allow the other person to define your reality. If your boundaries are healthy and your sense of self is a solid one, then nobody can define your reality for you. So that concludes today's segment. I've been talking about gaslighting. I talked about what it is, its various definitions, gave some examples, its interesting origins. It's the gaslighting movie. It's a very good movie, by the way. So it's the 1944 one is definitely worth watching, but as a movie. And I've talked about why it's a counterproductive concept in relationships and what we can do when you see these types of things showing up, namely tracking and impact statements. And that concludes this month's segment. You have been listening to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. I've been your host, Arnie Buss. I so appreciate your joining me today, or if you're listening on a rebroadcast. You can listen to Speaking of Listening every third Thursday at a little after 5 right here on Good Vibrations Radio. And to learn more, you can email me at ahbuss@consciousawareheart.com. Again, all one word. You can like me on Facebook at Aware Heart. You can follow me on Twitter at Effect5Com. That's Effect, the number 5, C-O-M-M. Although I haven't been tweeting lately. There's something I found aversive about the whole tweeting thing. And finally, my website is www.consciousawareheart.com. And until next time, remember, listen from your aware heart.
You should have listened. There is someone here inside, someone I thought had died so long ago.
That was Speaking of Listening by Dr. Arnie Buss. And as he mentioned, you can hear him on the third Thursday of each month right here on Good Vibrations Radio. If you want more information from Dr. Buss, go to the guest page of goodvibrationsradio.com and connect directly over to his link. So you can find out about his ongoing events and seminars and any other special webinars or presentations that he puts together. Well, as I started at the beginning of the show, we were talking about that Pluto retrograde in Capricorn. Boy, that is powerful. Started today, 5:49 a.m. Pacific time. Now, at the same time, Mercury entered Aries. Now, Mercury is still in retrograde, and it entered Aries while in retrograde. So it's coming out of Taurus, where it was nicely grounded, nicely stable. And it's moved back into Aries, and it's going to stay there till it leaves the retrograde on May 3rd. Now, the problem with Mercury in Aries to begin with is Mercury does not like being in Aries. They just don't get along. So your thoughts will be quicker, but they'll be quicker surrounded by the fog of the retrograde. And as many of you know, a Mercury retrograde tends to affect not only our thinking, but our speaking, electronics, computers, and also sometimes the drivers. The drivers on the road tend to get a little bit more erratic. And when they're in a fire sign like Mercury, it could be even more so. So even with the retrograde energy, we're going to find new thoughts, a willingness to try new things. But before we speak, it's best to remember the words of Michael Chase. He's the founder of the School of Kindness, and he tells us, before we speak, to think, am I being kind? And then express yourself. Now, there are two people to be kind to each time we speak. One is, are you being kind to yourself? Are you speaking up for something about yourself that really is important, or is it just an ego issue of needing to be right? And the second person is the person you're speaking or getting ready to speak to. Make sure that what you're saying is kind for them. And as I said on Monday's show and repeat here, we need to remember to always think twice before saying nothing. So with this Mercury retrograde in Aries, it's very good to remember, think twice before saying nothing. And then before you do speak, am I being kind? Now, tomorrow, on the 21st, Mars enters Gemini at 3:32 a.m. So in the early morning hours when most are asleep on the Pacific coast, Mars will go into Gemini. So Mars is our planet of energy and vigor and sometimes too much testosterone. And it's going into Gemini. Gemini is the two sides. So Gemini represents Castor and Pollux, which are two sides of one personality. And Gemini thrives on communications, but with both sides, it may feel as if people are speaking to you with forked tongue. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth. All of those little cliche phrases may apply. The important part is maintain your sense of humor, take it all in stride, and ensure that you're not adding to the drama by speaking out of both sides of your mouth. Have some fun, laugh and relax through the process, but take it easy. The other issue that happens tomorrow is Venus in Pisces, which is where it sits, and it's really enjoying itself, by the way. It entered last Saturday, and Venus loves Pisces. It has that sensitivity, and Pisces wants the harmony and beauty that Venus wants. But it's squaring Saturn in Sagittarius, and this will happen at 4:09 a.m. So this is a good day to spend alone. You know, a square is a fight. Saturn doesn't fight nicely, and when it fights with another planet, it makes it hard to enjoy the energy of that planet. So the fight with Venus will cool and dampen and make us feel unloved, abandoned, and seeing the worst about everyone with whom we're in a relationship. And if you're going through a relationship breakup, this ain't going to be your day. This is your pity party day. But remember what I said at the beginning, spend it alone. You'll find yourself being big on us versus them mentality. It's a good let me be a victim day. It's not a good day to confront a partner, a family member, a friend. Don't make anonymous phone calls to people. Leave messages on their voicemail. If you need to cry, take a warm bath with scented candles and watch Steel Magnolias or Fried Green Tomatoes or Terms of Endearment or any movie that will open your heart and let the sorrow release. Lay back, take it easy, indulge yourself a little bit. Open the gate and let the sorrow out. Know that this will pass. This is not the day to make big decisions about relationships, partnerships, friendships, period. Not now. This is not the time. So it's a challenging close to this week. And this energy carries us forward right into next week. We're really not going to feel the shift until we get to April 26th, new moon. And that's on Wednesday. So until we hit that new moon in Taurus, we're going to have a lot of things seeming to shift emotionally, internally. But because we are in that Sun-Taurus energy, it won't move swiftly. It will move cautiously and calculating. And that's good because it's not a time to take risks. It's not a time to make big shifts or big changes. It is a time to internally love, embrace, and accept yourself. And if you're looking for guidance, if you're finding that some of this is just all too much, I want to remind you that this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, April 22nd and April 23rd, is the virtual Psychic Fair online event once again. It's the third weekend of each month. Just go ahead, visit virtualpsychicfair.com. I'll put a link on Good Vibrations Radio. You can call in to any of the psychics. You can have a reading. All the workshops are free. It's all weekend. Call and get it done in the convenience and comfort of your own home. If you need to have a little bit of a pity party with some channeled guidance, get that guidance this weekend. I want to remind you, virtualpsychicfair.com. Well, that's it for today's Good Vibrations Radio. I want to thank you once again for listening. Remember, be blind to failure. Go ahead and honor, love, and revere yourself as the woundings come up. Don't project them outward on people. Learn to heal them yourself. Find out what caused them, what related to them, what triggers them, and then love yourself. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. The Ho'oponopono mantra. Thank you for listening to Good Vibrations Radio. And as we close out, I want to remind you once again, take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. We'll be back with more Good Vibrations Radio on Monday with Kirilani and Go With The Flow. and an update on the energy for the last week of April as we prepare to move forward into a month of creativity in May. Many blessings. Namaste.